I'm happy with it. You don't like the...
Noel doesn't have to look at himself. I have to look at Noel.
Wait, what do you want him to do?
All the people on the planet who work wearable puppets want to know what Noel looks like. God
dang it. I'll just do this the entire time. Oh.
Well, yeah, I think you should do that the whole time.
If you want to be in the know about how we put together our little show, if you like to hear the puppeteers play the characters that you cheer, so join us as we go, 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 go the frame.
Welcome to Below the Frame. I'm Matt Vogel. A long time ago, I remember Carol Spinney talking about the kind of a puppet that Big Bird is. And some people would call Big Bird a costume. Some people would call Big Bird a suit. But Carol did not. Carol, to my memory, called Big Bird a puppet that you wear. And I don't know if Carol made that up. I don't really care. I loved it. And that's what I call Big Bird. He is a puppet that you wear. So today, I thought it would be fun to talk to a couple of other performers who know what it's like to be inside a puppet that you wear. So Noel MacNeil and Martin P. Robinson, please welcome to Below the Frame. Hello.
Hey.
How are you both?
We're good.
Yeah.
We had an earthquake today. Did you hear about that?
I heard about it, but I did not partake.
It was so
exciting. You dated this already.
So now, if you remember when that earthquake was, you'll know when we filmed this.
Did this. April 5th.
Oh, well, now you really know because Noel said.
There you go.
Oh, do you like to try to keep these? Oh, you know, it could be anytime, anywhere.
Absolutely. But it's okay. It's okay.
That's okay. This is the editing part that Matt mentioned.
I'm too lazy to edit. I'm just too lazy.
Yeah, I'm sure that none of this will see the light of the day.
Yeah, well, we'll see about that. You know, I was just thinking about this the other day. We have known each other. I've known you two gentlemen for almost 30 years. Now I know that you've known each other longer. But I have known you for almost 30 years, which is a good old long time. It's crazy. I can't believe it. I can't believe that I've known you both that long.
Marty, what was your first year on Sesame?
81.
Okay. So I've known you over 40 years. But my first year was 82.
That's unbelievable.
You were there when I was... Weren't you there when I was there?
I was there in the fall of 1982 onward. So your first year, I wasn't there. But from 82 on, I was. And that's when you were doing Little Shop at Night.
Yeah.
And doing Sesame in the morning. So yeah. You were like doing Sesame and then in your dressing room completely exhausted and taking a nap. And then going to Little Shop every night.
Yeah.
So you were like exhausted and jacked like you wouldn't believe. So
and I remember every time I sat down, I fell asleep. And,
yes.
And now that you're doing Little Shop now, you probably do the same thing, right?
Oh, yes. Well, being the swing, I don't do it as often. There was like a year of January of 2023. That was when COVID just ravaged the cast. And so it was like Teddy Udine was out. Weston Long was out. Aaron, who does The Voice, was out. So Major came in and did The Voice. I did puppeteering. John Hoche came in and did puppeteering. And we were there for like over a week because that was the old COVID regulations where you couldn't come back until like 10 days.
What? Yeah.
So I was exhausted.
Yeah. So you were doing every show back to back for, for 2 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's eight shows, people.
Well, you know, this is actually a great place to start because in Little Shop, that is a puppet that you wear. Eventually, that is a puppet that you wear.
I don't think about that, but you're absolutely right.
And all three of us have been in Little Shop in some way, shape, and form.
That's right.
We've all done it.
And all three of us have been in Big Bird.
Oh, that was a question I was going to ask you, Marty. I didn't know if you'd ever been in Big Bird.
I was in Big Bird when the guest star on Elmo's game show canceled at the last minute. What's her name?
Right.
I guess she should probably remain unnamed.
Yes, I remember. Yeah, and I was not there.
When she canceled, you weren't there, and I mean, it was supposed to be a human, and it was the whole thing was designed. The whole obstacle course had to be a human. I mean, it couldn't be a puppet. And so they said, you know, Karen came up to my door and said, here's the deal. What do you say? And, you know, of course, you know, the answer to that is always yes. Yeah.
But yeah. I would say that if somebody did come and ask me if I wanted to get in Snuffy, my answer would be no. I've never been in Snuffy.
Wait,
well, that all depends upon which end you're getting into.
Right, Snuffy, right. Yeah, you know? I've never been in Snuffy. I don't think.
Noel, you've spent a lot of time in.
For sure.
In the front and the back.
That's right. That's right. So I'm sorry, Matt. It's required.
Well, now I got to get in. Yes, at some point, I will do it.
Come next season.
All
that's
right,
it.
Okay.
And then we all have to get into.
Yeah.
We all have to get into
casting people. Yeah.
I haven't been in Bear, but have you been in Bear, Matt?
I've been in a Bear type, a second Bear. It was Carmen did the voice for the Bear.
It was Bear's girlfriend. Yes. So there was a second Bear that was dressed up with a Spanish shawl and a little Spanish thing. And her name is Ursa. And she came to visit Bear. And so Matt was inside and Carmen did the voice.
Interesting.
But it's great. It's like it's on Disney Plus, the episode, and To All a Good Night. And she actually comes back again for Bear's birthday. It was Bear's special friend who came to visit.
Special friend?
Yeah, special friend. They can't hear you wink on the podcast if they're listening to it. They can't hear you wink, but they can see you wink if they're watching. But I thought what we would do is I thought first we would talk about, like, we'll just kind of start sort of at the beginning and do like a mini version of how you landed the gig of the puppet that you wear. So Noel, tell us what puppet that we're talking about, the puppet that you wear, if people don't know. and then kind of how you got the gig. I mean, they should know if they don't.
Yeah, so it's just so basically back in March of 1997, I got a call to do an audition for this show that the Jim Henson Company was producing, and so I went down, and it was at this sort of like pier, and I got into this puppet because it was a game show that they were piloting, and I got into this puppet that was very much supposed to be like an alien host. And I got into the puppet, and I was thinking, this is just like Audrey 2. And I'm sitting inside thinking, why didn't you just get Marty Robinson to do this? It's like, why am I here? It's like, it's obvious who needs to be in this thing. And so I did it, and I left, and I forgot all about it. And then around 4 o'clock that same day, I got another call and saying, no, we want you to come back, and there's this other character we want you to audition for. And they sent me, they faxed me, yes, kids, faxed me, the... if you don't know what it is, Google it. It's the picture of the characters. And it was this bear, and it had like this big face of the moon behind him and all these little critters. I'm like, oh, that looks cute, and gave me the sides. And so I got in the cab because I lived on the Upper East Side at that point. So it took like a 20-minute cab ride to Henson. And I'm inside like looking it over. And as soon as I walk in, the executive at that time, Peter Van Roden, came up to me and said, use your own voice. And I was like, what? It's like... We're the Muppets. We don't do that. Right. What? I said, no, do your own voice. And it was because at that time, there was another very large character who had a voice that they wanted to not sound as goofy, and so that parents could sit through. So
Barney. Talking about Barney, right? Barney?
We're not naming names.
If we were, it would be something like Barney.
We'll say Flarney.
Flarney, yes. That works. We'll call him Rex because you know.
Sure. That'll
be good. Which is just like code for Barney. So,
yeah.
Yep.
Another wink to the camera. And also at that point, I also found out that they had heard like all these goofy voices like all day. And it was for this test. It was a bear. So all these voices were just like, "Hi, I'm a big old bear. Right. How are you doing?" Welcome to the big blue. It's like, so they were like, just use your own voice. And I was like, okay. So I got inside the understructure because it wasn't covered with fur. It was just the understructure. And it felt so comfortable. It was ridiculous how comfortable this thing was. And I was like, wow, like this would be really cool to do. And then I realized, wait a minute. It is 4:45 on a Friday. they've already picked this person. They're just hedging their bets. So I just said, screw it. I'm just going to have fun. And so I did. I was like running around and I was like talking to camera. And at that time, because I wasn't a dad yet, I had my, what I call my Uncle Noel mode in my voice. It was just pretty much that mode of like, whatever you want to do when I would visit kids. And then it got to the part in the script when it said, like, he smells something and realizes it's the viewer. And so that's when I like did a full circle sniffing around and then went to the camera and just jammed the nose all the way in and pulled it out again. I was like, it's you. And just like did it again. And then there was another part where he was talking about water. And yes, that was the in-depth topic of this script with water. And so there was like a clear glass of water, which I picked up and I like held it in front of the camera and then had it lined up his face behind it so you could like see through the glass. I was just like, because I was just having fun. And I could see through because it was just scrim, so I could just see the big monitor, so I just used that. And then I got out and I said thank you and I just like completely forgot about it. Just like let it go. And then the following Monday around 6 o'clock, that's when I got the call from Henson saying, we want you to be Bear. And I was like, what? Seriously? Yeah. So, and then that's how I got it.
Wow. And the rest is history.
It's history.
And that was a Henson Disney co-production, wasn't it?
Yeah, because that was back. See, this is the other story that a lot of people don't realize was because Jim Henson had made a deal with the Walt Disney Company, and because he and Michael Eisner were friends, and so he thought, and Jim realized that he wasn't going to be around, and thought the best place for his characters to live on would be with the Walt Disney Company. And then unfortunately Jim died, and so the agreement got amended so that the Jim Henson Company would create 3 shows for the Walt Disney Company. The first show was a primetime show called Dinosaurs, which is another Public You Wear. There you go. Hey, Bill Beretta. So, and then the second one was another one for ABC Primetime, which was called Alien in the Family. Which was, that was a quite telling snort there, man.
I loved it. I really enjoyed it. I remember going to the set and visiting David Rudman, who played the baby character, if you like.
Bulba.
Yeah. I remember visiting them, and Joey Mazzarino was assisting, and didn't they shoot it in the same set where you then shot Bear in the Big Blue House? Yeah.
That studio has been home to Alien the Family, to Bear in the Big Blue House, to Between the Lions, to Ubi, and now Sesame Street. So then the third show, they would do one more show. And so
did either of you work on Alien and the Family?
No.
No, I did not.
Me neither.
No. And so the third show was due. And so rather than do one for primetime, they decided we'll do one for the new children's division of Disney Channel, which was going to be called like Playhouse Disney. And so they brought in Mitchell Krieghman, who had done Clarissa Explains It All for Nickelodeon. And from what I heard, he was going through the files, seeing like what ideas had been thought of in the past that maybe we could develop. And he found this file about this house and this bear. And the house in the file was sentient. So the house could actually talk. It was like its own character. This is like H.R. Puffin stuff level at this point.
Another puppet that you wear.
Another puppet you wear. And so then that's how they did it. So for a while it was the bear was co-owned by Henson and the Walt Disney Company. So yes.
Yeah, and now if we want to watch Bear in the Big Blue House, we can.
Where? Finally.
Because it's on Disney Plus.
Disney Plus.
Oh, good.
Finally on Disney Plus.
Yeah. Marty, tell us, you know, you play a character called Mr. Snuffleupagus. Snuffy.
Yes.
Bird's best friend.
Yes.
How did you get that role? Because that was originally played by Jerry Nelson, right?
Yes. I auditioned, along with, hundreds of other people. But I had a background of costume characters and puppetry. I had worked I think that the first costume character I worked was probably for Bill Baird, back at the Reynolds Theater in Williamsburg, Virginia, which is this big, huge goon that you'd put on, you know, with a helmet on, and then the helmet worked this little head on top of these massive shoulders, and it was a big walk around character that would come out and terrorize the audience mid show.
Perfect.
And so I had been in that, and then I worked for a group called Addison Bill, the Puppet People. I'm actually writing an article about them for the Puppetry Journal now. I just found out just this past weekend that Addis, who was a dear mentor of mine, passed away last September. So I've been just immersing myself in the people that worked for him, and you know, spreading the word and you know, telling stories. But I did a lot of mall shows for him. That's where I met Anthony Asbury.
Oh,
was cool. Doing mall shows in New Jersey with Addis Williams, and we would. There was always a show in the side of a truck that you'd do, and then these walk around characters, and one of them was Softy the Snowman, which is this with a big snowball that you'd get inside with massive galoshes that you'd put on your feet. And then the head was a rod puppet with triggers that would make the coal eyes move, and little twig eyebrows go up and down. So it had levers and, of course, a mouth. And then you run all around popping this head off or sucking it down. And it was this big, huge, wearable puppet. And he always made lots of characters like this. There was a giant mushroom that we did that Anthony and I traded back and forth with, where you'd get inside this big mushroom, talking mushroom, and then there was a caterpillar, maybe a 3-foot caterpillar on top of the mushroom, kind of like Alice in Wonderland. And so you'd be working the mushroom would be talking to the caterpillar, and the caterpillar up there with this big, huge, complicated rod puppet that made it do all kinds of things, and then you'd use this little walking stage. There was a tree called Leafy Lou that you climb inside this big, huge tree, and he had a big, friendly face, and then a squirrel that would pop out of a knot hole in his side, and then one of his branches was holding a nest of birds, which are all animated. You'd pull things and birds would pop around and sing. So it's this whole walk around animated wearable stage where the stage itself talked and then had characters that it could interact with. So kept making these nutty costumes, you know, we would get in. So I had a lot of experience with that stuff, so that by the time that I started kind of committing to puppetry and then auditioned for Muppets, I knew how to lip sync. I started that actually with Bill Baird. He always had some hand puppets and some rod puppets and some marionettes and the costume characters. He always had every type of puppetry in every show he did. So I had learned, I knew my lip sync pretty well. So by the time I auditioned, there was a big, huge mass audition at the Ansonia Hotel, which was about 300 people. Basically, they called in every person that had ever sent them a picture and resume. And of course, back then, it was an 8x10 picture, stapled with the resume on the back. And that was how you auditioned, as you sent those things in. That was before answering machines, way before the internet. Where you had an answering service that would, that would field your return calls. Anyway, so I got called in on that big, huge audition at the Ansonia, and it was one of those things where they had divided people up into rooms, and there would be 30 people in this room and 20 people in that room and 50 people in that room, and this group is doing the ABCs and the other group is doing some other. Richard Hunt was there, and Kermit Love, and Jane, and Carolee Wilcox. They were all kind of Frank Kane. Remember Frank Kane?
Oh yeah,
was helping run all these little busted up workshops. And then at the end of every day, you would get a call to come back the next day or not come back the next day. And I kept getting the calls to come back. And after 5 days, there were only about 25 of us. One of whom was the fabulous Pamela Arciero. And then you broke up into groups of five and, you know, created scenes. And that's when Jim actually showed up. And, and you know,
wow.
see the scenes and critique. And then it turned out there was a job they were hiring for. And they started talking about it then. Up until then, it was just kind of, well, this is just a look-see. You know, we would just want to see who's out there.
Right.
And anyway, it turned out that they were casting for Snuffleupagus, which there's certain requirements. And of course, you know, Pam was not in the running for that. she was certainly, you know, good enough, but not tall enough or male enough.
Yeah. Do you know why it was that what was it with Jerry that he didn't want to continue anymore?
Jerry, what I heard was that he had hurt himself. He'd hurt his back doing it, and that he, you know, wasn't going to get into it because he had hurt his back. Jerry said, I've heard him talk about it in later years when he kind of indicated he was also kind of fed up with it to a certain extent. Sure. I'm going with back injury.
Okay. All right.
But what they so Jerry was doing the voice from the booth for a number of years while Richard Hunt was in the front, and Frank Kane was in the back.
Oh, I didn't know that.
But of course, you know, do the math. You know, they got to pay three people to do Snuffy.
Yeah.
Which, you know, if you know your math at all, and if you were a bean counter on Sesame, you know, realize that it's much cheaper to pay two people.
That's right. Yeah.
Two people.
Yeah. And you can't have the back end of
Snuffy. They were highly motivated creatively.
You can't have the back end of Snuffy just dragging along with no one in it.
You need two people.
At least.
I've done it without a person in the back. One time, there's a poster where Snuffy is peeking through the doors of 1, 2, 3.
Oh yeah. I was there for that.
Yeah.
So it was like Snuffy, and that was back when he wasn't seen yet.
That's right.
They wanted him in.
He was just
so he's up at the top of the stairs, peeking out of the door. So in order to do that, we disconnected him. And just like walked, which was the freakiest thing
ever seen. Yeah.
Still hanging and just like walking away from the front.
Yeah, a lot of people developed, nightmares from that day seeing Snuffy's front half walk away.
Yeah,
but that was the one time. It wouldn't have fit in otherwise.
Wow.
No.
I was with Peter Baird was amongst the last five. There were a couple of other puppeteers who I actually do remember their names, but will remain nameless. But Peter has Peter was a good friend, and you know, and has passed away many, many years ago, and was a wonderful puppeteer. He actually would have been a good choice. There was the audition process for getting in Snuffy, and we started. The first thing they put me in was Sweetums.
Oh.
We've all been
in Sweetums.
Hey!
Yep.
Talk about the circle of life here. Wow.
Yeah.
Our DNA is spread all over the
motherfucker. Right. Oh, God. Oh, well, here's it. Have you all been in the Coca-Cola Bear?
Yes. That was my first job.
We've all been in the Coca-Cola Bear.
Yeah.
Wow.
That is weird.
There are Muppet people out there just making little lists, updating online as we're talking.
I think of all the characters I've been in, I think Coca-Cola Bear may have been the most difficult. Would you gentlemen agree?
It wasn't easy.
It wasn't comfortable.
Yeah, because it was just the prototype. Like when I used it, and I'm sure it was the same for you guys. It was the prototype. They didn't make a new one until much, much later, I believe.
I believe I was the first one in, I think.
Right. He was before John? Because John Henson kind of took it over.
Yeah, way before John.
Okay.
Because I was, it had, you had to be left-handed.
Yeah.
And I was a lefty. Mm-hmm. Remember that? Because he was...
Yes. Had to shake hands.
He was had to shake hands and had to, you know, can't shake hands with a left hand. That's the devil's work right there.
Exactly. For those of you listening, Noel is now rolling his eyes.
This is a perfect segue into how I landed my puppet gig, because actually I had answered an ad before I even moved to New York City that had a picture of Kermit the Frog that said, "Do you measure up to be a Muppet?" And it said, "Are you 6 foot at least? Are you left-handed? Are you blah, 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 blah." Yeah. And so I answered that ad, and I hadn't moved to New York yet, but they said, "When you move to New York, let us know," which was weird. I moved to New York. I let them know. They said, "Okay, great." And a couple, however long it was, they said, "We're having this audition. Can you come in and do this?" I didn't even know what it was for when I went in. And I went in and I met that day John Henson, who was playing the Coca-Cola polar bear. And he was so sweet and just very nice. And he put me inside this Coca-Cola polar bear. And he said he was looking for somebody to be his double. Like if he couldn't do it, because he would go to like the Olympics and he would do like the fancy things. And I would be then the guy that would go to the grocery store openings and the, you know, things like that. And that's kind of what happened. But he was so sweet. And that day, the day that I met him, he said, "Do you want to go to lunch?" And I was like, "Yeah, I do. Yeah. Yeah. I'll go to lunch with you, John Henson. Of course." And I went to lunch and I, you know, we talked at lunch. And then at lunch, he said, "Hey, you want to come up to my house for New Year's Eve?" And I was like, "Yeah, I do want to come to your house for New Year's Eve." So shortly after that, we went up to his house for New Year's Eve. And shortly after that, I was doing grocery store openings as the Coca-Cola polar bear. I had told them, I was very upfront. I said, "I am left-handed, but I am a right-handed puppeteer." And they said, "That's fine." And because you're right, you had to have your... You had to have your left hand in the head, and he had these great little, like, his cheeks would move, I believe, and his eyes, he would squint or something. There were some pulleys inside his...
His eyes would squint. I don't remember.
It was the same. Maybe it did the two things. Maybe pulling did a smile in his little eyes. I can't remember.
Did you have a camera out one of the nostrils?
Out the nostril, yeah. But that's, I would do that for a little while, and that's what I did until I got a call from Rene Rochelle asking if I could do a Big Bird voice. And of course, I'm an actor, so I said, "Yes, of course I can do a Big Bird voice." And then I went out and I got like you know, the Big Bird's Greatest Hits CD, and I listened to that because it had been years since I'd really watched Sesame Street, and certainly never really thought about doing Big Bird or ever thought I would have the opportunity. But I arrived that day, and this is a story I've told a lot, but I arrived that day at the audition, and there were certain people there that I met for the very first time, including, I believe, Noel McNeil. I believe you were there. Were you not there? I believe you were there. I think.
I'm going to say I wasn't there.
Oh, you weren't there? Ah, shoot. Okay. I thought you were there. Peter Lintz, Eric Jacobson, maybe Tim Lagasse, and I thought you were there. No, but okay, you weren't there. I will leave your memory over mine. That's for sure.
So these are the people that were auditioning.
Yeah. And it was the first time I'd ever met Carol. And it's the thing where Rene Rochelle said, "Carol Spinney, this is Matt Vogel." And Carol's eyes lit up and he said, "Vogel, your name means bird. This may be the job for you." So, I thought I had it in right away. But that was the first time I put on Big Bird. And, you know, I had done the Coca-Cola polar bear, but it was slightly different. I mean, it was all kind of structurally sound, like you didn't have to hold up anything really like you did with Big Bird. It was such a different thing, and I was a relatively new puppeteer, so it was
on what year is
it? Would have been 1995, 4, 5, 6, somewhere in there. 1994, 5 or 6, and somewhere in there. And after that, I had another kind of a one-on-one with Carol. You know, he took me under his wing, and after and the rest is history there. But
so you were brought on Sesame originally as the backup
Yes.
Heir apparent.
Yes, because Carroll was 65 years old. He was 65 at that time. So, you know, he was, you know, if it, he didn't want to do everything. He wanted to travel more and he wanted to kind of, you know, do less. He didn't want to have to, you know, do the equivalent of going to a supermarket opening.
So all the other things that you worked into, with Snuffy, I mean, with Bird being the, you know, the kind of the basis.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, that's kind of how I got in to everything.
And then gave, you know, then all the other puppetry followed from there. Yeah. Interesting.
I mean, I had done puppetry on my own before and I kind of self-taught. I was like taught myself how to use the monitor. And then once I did kind of get in at Sesame Street, I would like hang out with Tyler Bunch and Eric and Peter, I think, and we would do like a monitor night at Tyler's apartment. And so, but that was my story.
I just remembered when I first got put in the Sweetums costume, it was Rita Marie Perugi. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She, mm-hmm. that was like her first day was bringing that to the rehearsal studio and putting me in that costume. Wow.
Yeah. That's a,
and then I went down to, Kermit Love's workshop and that's when I got put into Snuffy the first time.
What was it like going into that puppet for the very first time? What did that feel like?
I remember, do you guys know Bob Marty?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bob Marty is the one who put me in.
Okay.
He's my dear friend and neighbor. He just lives a few miles away from here, and he has young kids too.
Yeah.
So I've known Bob Marty since that day too. I remember the story of Jerry hurting his back. And as soon as I put it on, I said, oh, this is how he hurt his back.
It happened.
Yeah. So because what was it specifically that you tagged, like, oh wait, this is why he hurt himself?
There's a aluminum backpack harness in there, and which is like a Steadicam harness frame in there, and the shoulder straps they were all padded nicely, but all the weight was on the shoulders. And the back, and there was a really nice waist thing that was taking a little bit of the weight, but not much.
Yeah.
So I said, okay, I'm going to loosen these straps, and I'm going to really make this waist belt really snug. So I strapped that around my hips and put say 70% of the weight on my legs, and. That point, it was, I could see, you know, tell that my, you know, back was going to have a much easier time with it. And I was using the shoulders just to aim him and to manipulate the head, basically. But the weight was all in the legs. And I remember thinking that this is the safe way to work this.
Was anybody in the back, or did they just put you in the front part and that back was hanging?
I know somebody was in the back, but I have no idea who. I was just concentrated. You know, Bob Marty might have gone in the back.
I'm going to say maybe Bob. He may have gone in the back.
You know, all the times that he and I have told that story, nobody's ever asked that question. I don't know if it was one of the people in Kermit's workshop. It was down at his place on
Great Jones Street.
On Great Jones, yeah. And just to finish my interminable tale is after I'd been done the stint in Snuffy, that was it. And then I didn't hear anything for a week, a month, a couple of months. And I knew that it was,
wow.
I knew that it was a done deal and I had not gotten it. And I knew that, you know, that Peter Baird was doing the same things and he had a lot of experience and quite a pedigree. And, you know, and these other guys were no slouches either. And so I was done. And then I got a schedule in the mail and for Sesame. And I called up, Marianne Horstmeyer, who was
all
in charge
names of, just popping back.
I know.
And I said, Marianne, I got this schedule in the mail for Sesame Street. Why would you send that to me? And, you know, of course, the answer was, oh, what? Nobody told you that you were hired?
It sounds like that's a common kind of thing. You kind of happen. You don't necessarily learn.
Back then, the three of us, I think, have been very conscious because of the way, you know, we were treated back then, not to treat the new characters like it. We are excellent with disseminating information and being very clear about who has the job and who does not have the job.
Right. Well, while we're here, Marty, just tell us, because you were kind of getting there with the backpack, and tell us what is inside. When you're inside, how does Snuffy work? What are you doing in there? Oh, visual.
Oh, it's a demonstration.
So you're standing up. He's standing.
Marty Robin has now gotten up. Okay. Oh, he's backed up. He's holding up a dog.
There's a dog inside Snuffy. Imagine there's a zipper right here.
Yes.
And I climb
inside
in.
The belly of the dog. Yes.
No.
Perfect.
Two of the tiniest puppeteers we've ever seen.
You climb in through the midsection. You step into the left foot, into the right foot, which are clogs, which so you don't need to touch it at all because you can't. Then you get into this strap. You get into this strap. You take the thing around the waist and you buckle it, and then you take the weight. And as soon as you take the weight, you've got the whole thing is there on your body, you know, floating, you know, with a good base. Left hand, again, left-handed, this is where it's good, works the mouth just like this. Oh, bird, what are we going to do now? Oh, dear. And it moves, it has lateral movement, and you can push it up when he gets pouty. Your right hand here has a little bar, eyes left, eyes right, blink, blink, blink. So that's, and then you set the eyes and go for the snuffle, which is right here. Which is a curved stick, so you curve the stick, and the end of the stick, you know, does this, and then you curve it and lift it, and you can get, you know, that kind of movement. So the eyes and the snuffle are all worked with the same hand. You just have to kind of artfully go between them so you can't see the switch.
So it's very simple. But it's kinda super simple. It sounds really
simple. Super simple.
God, it sounds so
when I got into it. I got into it a couple of weeks ago, and actually I'll be in again this coming Thursday. It's like coming home. It's like putting on your you know, a skin that you're at this point. I'm so comfortable and so happy being inside, even though it's, you know, it's heavy and, you know, and it's dark. It just feels so good being in there, and my hands just do what they need to do. You don't have to think about anything. I watch the monitor there, and you know, it's just Snuffy being Snuffy, and I'm facilitating, you know, I just think the way he thinks, and then he acts the way he's supposed to act. And it's just, I imagine, I don't play the piano, but I imagine, you know, 10 fingers on 88 keys, you know, and just feeling the music, and your fingers do what they need to do to express what's in your heart. And that's what we do with our characters.
There is always such, when it's a Snuffy day, the mood on the set, everybody's so excited. Like, it's a really special day when Snuffy comes lumbering around the corner. Everybody's got their phone out. They're all videoed. They're all getting videos with them. Everybody goes, hey, Snuffy. It's the coolest and most, it's just such a special day. It's real. I hope you can you feel that inside there, Marty, when you're feeling that love? Because it's really cool. It's a lovely, lovely, lovely thing.
Yeah.
And as well as the patience you have for all the people who want
true.
All of these photos in between scenes.
It's an obligation, and it's a joy, and, you know, it's part of the job, but it's just what an incredible job to have people who, you know, love your character that much. I mean, you know, and we've all been there with it. You have to be just totally grateful for that kind of love.
Yeah.
when Snuffy came out, and Noel, you weren't there. They played Snuffy's theme.
They played his song.
Oh my god!
Cheers.
It's so great. Now, wow! Before we move away from Snuffy and go to Bear, we would be remiss if we didn't mention Bryant Young, who's in the back. Now, what is he doing? Because he's done it for many, many, many years. I don't know.
Bryant's been doing it longer than I have.
Longer than you.
Wow. Bryant was in the back. Yeah, he was one of the guys in the back when Richard was in the front. Kermit Love brought him in. Kermit, you know, he was a dancer. He was an accomplished ballet dancer that had worked with George Balanchine, and Kermit Love met him when he was a Balanchine dancer, and then Kermit kind of brought him in to the, you know, the costume characters. So Bryant actually has been at Sesame the longest of all of us.
Wow. Cool. Yeah. Did not know that.
Yeah.
I just remember like that day, like the most impressive thing. One of the most impressive things I saw was when Snuffy was on a trampoline and you guys had to coordinate jumping up and down on a trampoline. it was just like all of us, like it was like impressive and like, Jesus Christ, if anything were to happen right
so
now.
So dangerous. So dangerous.
How many people would we take out?
That was the day that Bryant finally got a monitor for the back and has had one ever since that day. But before that, he was blind.
Wow.
Yeah.
So the way it works, Matt, is that, you know, I have most of the weight, but I'm in the strongest position to carry it. I'm standing straight up. He has less weight, but he's hunched over.
Yes.
Is he wearing a harness too? Or he's wearing a harness?
Yep.
Yeah.
I didn't know he was leaning
on that. So he, even though it's less weight, you know, he's actually the one who's kind of in danger of, and when we did the Don't Eat the Pictures special at the Metropolitan Museum, and the little kid who was the human star of the show was riding Snuffy. Bryant was bent over like this with his hands up there supporting this child up over his head while we walked. You were there, Noel.
Yeah. And it was like just making sure. And it was a very short scene, like let's get this.
Just the visual.
And like cut and like take the child off.
Wow.
Yeah, and we begged him not to do giddy up, giddy up, giddy up, and he did, and we collapsed twice because he was giddy upping, and you know we couldn't take that kind of pressure at all.
Yeah,
it's much nicer having Prairie Dawn in there,
and for Elma. Yes, it is.
We've done that a couple times too.
So we've heard what is inside Snuffy and how you're performing Snuffy. So Noel, tell us about Bear and how you are performing Bear.
Bear, I always say it's like it's the Big Bird technology. Mm-hmm. So it's the same way Bird works, is that your right arm is up through the neck inside his head and your left arm is in the left arm. And then there's this little string, little monofilament, fish line, from the left wrist to this little ring just under the neck and then down to the right arm. Or wing, and so it's cantilevered. So whatever the left would do, the right would go up. And then whenever Bear, like for his songs or for like dancing, like the cha-cha, then we would trade out for a shorter one. So this way it would be more exaggerated so that it's more like in sync, like dancing up and down. And so he was like the second Big Bird-like character I did. I did, before that, it was on the show Eureka's Castle, and I did Magellan, and that was in similar, where I had my arm up inside Magellan's neck, my hand in him, and then somebody could do the right hand of Magellan, and then someone could do the tail of Magellan. Very often, Marty, Lynn Hippen would be that. And also Magellan's little pet, Cooey. But I got a lot of training for doing that from having subbed in for Carol for like the parades, especially for like Follow That Bird, which was quite an experience, which was great. And the movie still holds up, by the way. If you ever watch Follow That Bird, it still holds up. The whole message of a family is people who love you It's great, and it still holds up, and it's a wonderful little film. So,
did Magellan have feet? Was he ever a?
No, I always wanted him to have feet, but no. But what they did was, he was like, he had this, like, I could wear the body, and then they could just pop the neck and head off, and I could rehearse with just my hand up in the air, and then they would just put it on. But I had a little monitor and like the microphone, but all the puppeteers were standing up, and the set was raised up. So I was on these runways that were clamped together, and then had these boards on the sides that I could feel with my feet, so I wouldn't like tumble over and crash on my co-stars. Which, looking back now, was good rehearsal for Bear.
Yeah, same kind of similar kind of thing.
It was the same thing. Yeah, because the whole stage was on this platform. Ironically, it was the platform that was used for Aliens and the Family. They kept it. And they threw out that suburban house and built the big blue house on top of the same platform that you could just pop holes in the floor out of. And so they would have like the little board so that I could like feel it with my feet. And the house was divided. Like the first floor was on one side and the second floor was on the other. And we called it Camera Alley. was in the middle. So you had to let the cameras could go back and forth, following Bear from like room to room whenever he danced. And so, and he was, yeah, and he was actually in two pieces. Bear was like the bottom half, kind of like almost like big clown pants. This hoop skirt, this big clown pants. And then they would put the top on me and they would zip it up and like snap it down. So in case of an emergency, there was no way I could possibly get out. So first day, my first wrangler, Christina and I told her, like, let's just practice something really quick. If there was something going to happen, I'm going to put my hand on your shoulder and my other hand, his head, on your other shoulder, and you're just going to walk me towards the end of the platform and back. Because this is what would happen in case anything happened.
Yeah.
Did you ever have an emergency exit protocol?
No. No, we didn't. We didn't. I just made one up for me. It's
like, you had one.
You're on your own. Everybody else can see.
So you cannot. You like, could not like, get out of that puppet without help.
Couldn't go.
Marty, can you get out of Snuffy if you had to? Because they zip you up.
If
in an emergency,
I could climb out the.
Oh yeah,
I could climb out the mouth.
I guess you could.
In an emergency,
yeah, and then reach back in for Bryant and pull him out.
Yeah, again, you know, it would be, it's the stuff that nightmares are made of. But I could get out the mouth in emergency.
I feel pretty confident that I could get out of Big Bird. I could take that whole puppet off if I had to.
Right. You just put the wing in
and just pull him off.
Just like pull him off.
Because Big Bird works very similar to Bear, but you know, I'm not, there's no buttons or snaps or zippers or anything. The puppet is just put over the top of my head. My arm goes up inside the mouth. And, you know, if I looked down, I could see the floor a little bit. But it's not like being zippered and snapped inside of your death puppet.
I remember when Brian Meehl was doing Barkley the dog in China in Sesame Goes to China. He was doing a thing where he was crossing a river and had to go on stepping stones across this raging river, and he knew that if he fell into the river, he would die.
Wow.
That he would drown before anyone could get him. So, I mean, Brian Meehl was, you know, was quite an athlete, especially back then. And, you know, and he made sure that he hit every one of those steps, but it was hair raising.
Okay. We're going to put a pin in it for this episode, and we're going to pick it up again next episode, where we are going to talk more about puppets that you wear. So I want to thank Noel McNeil and Martin P. Robinson for joining me today, and we'll see you next time. Below the Frame is a Welcome Matt production produced by me, Matt Vogel. The theme song was written by Stephanie DeBruzzo and myself and performed by my band, The Mighty Weaklings. Thanks to Dave Holteen at DaveHolteenDesign.com. He created our podcast art. You can follow me on Instagram at WelcomeMattV or search Matt Vogel. I post things every now and again, and it'll help you know when new episodes of this podcast, for example, are coming out. If you are sharing podcasts, please let somebody know about this one. And also, if you have a few seconds, just rate and review this one. I'm sure that that pleases the podcast gods or something. You can find Below the Frame wherever you get your podcasts, and we are now a video podcast on YouTube, so you can see our faces if that's something that you want to do. Thanks, everybody out there, for listening. I am Matt Vogel, and we will see you next time when we go below the frame. Go, go, go below the frame.